Now we take a look at wonderful work, interesting research that has been done by Professor Chase Pillay. It has to do with orphans, vulnerable children, and children growing up in child-headed households. What happens to them when they grow up only getting minimal care? And what are these costs to society if our interventions come too late? And how do they cope, you know, dealing with stresses, dealing with anxieties that so many other children are buffered from? Because parents deal with certain issues in other households. So what happens to these children? So we join the professor now to give us a sense of his findings, what he plans to do with them, and what we can then look into and consider as society, because there are broader long-term consequences economically and socially that we will have to contend with if our interventions are inappropriate or do not come on time. Good afternoon, Professor Pillay. Thank you so much for your time.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure.
So when and why did you start researching the condition of South African orphans and vulnerable children?
As it's been the last 5 to 6 years mm-hmm. that I've been involved in this particular study. And the very first time that I actually got to know about this problem was when one of my PhD students was involved in the research in the Limpopo province. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, as we begin to look at the literature and assess what is happening in the Limpopo province, then only we realized that we had a big problem right on our doorstep.
Yes.
And on the basis of that, then I've just did some very basic research to find out what is their problem mm-hmm. and what is happening about this problem. Mm-hmm. And then on the basis of that, I applied for some research grants to help me conduct the studies.
Yes.
So basically, that has been happening from a PhD study, and then it moved on to a big research project mm-hmm. that has been funded by the National Research Foundation and the Department of Science and Technology.
Right. So what have you found? What happens to children who receive minimum care in their home, in their school environments, especially when they haven't had that minimal care in their early, very important formative years?
We've done some very critical studies so far. There's lots of master's and PhD students that have actually completed studies on the question that you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I was to just sum up in terms of what we're finding that there's lots of problems in terms of psychological issues, lots of problems in terms of social concerns, lots of problems in terms of educational matters.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was to give you a very quick rundown, from the psychological side, we picked up that these children experience more depression, anxiety, stress, increased levels of vulnerability. So those things are emerging quite strongly in our studies at the moment.
Mm.
In fact, we just completed a major PhD study looking at anxiety and depression levels with single orphans and double orphans.
Mm-hmm.
And we compared them to non-orphans, and we actually found that there is a significant amount of depression and anxiety in those children.
Yes.
So in terms of education, psychological problems, of course, there's a lot of problems there.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to the educational problems, the things that are emerging are strongly that children don't have money to go to school. They don't have money to have uniforms. They do not have school fees to pay. They don't have to have transport for the taxis to get to the schools. So children end up not going to schools, and then we end up seeing that there's lots of or increases in absenteeism in the school. We also notice that children are actually not going to school because they're on the streets begging just because they need to feed the young.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also found very, very disturbingly that lots of young girls are actually being sexually exploited because they are used by older men in the community to say that we will keep you safe, we will protect you, or we will give you some food for the day, or to feed your younger siblings, and for that you need to give me some sexual favors.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, the whole issue in terms of HIV and AIDS increasing is obviously going to be a continuous problem. So those are some of the things that we find emerging.
Yes.
With regard to the
No, I was going to say that, and this obviously continues that cycle of poverty, that one then finds it even more challenging and even harder to come out of poverty, because this then happens with generation after generation.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we're picking up is this very cycle that you're talking about. Mm. It's definitely a very vicious cycle. And if you look at all the research that has been done right from early childhood periods, you will see that this vicious cycle in terms of poverty continues. Mm-hmm. That children come from poverty-stricken backgrounds, actually end up unemployed or in crime, and then also end up being poor as well. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the vicious cycle continues. Mm. But I must also point out that we've, you know, when we started this study, it was very demoralizing because we could just see what was happening and it was very difficult to look at the situation of our children. So it was quite demoralizing. So what we actually did as well was to say, let's look at some of the resilience factors mm-hmm. In these children. And much of our studies now also begin to focus quite a bit in terms of the resilience. And you know what, remarkably so, that we've actually seen that many of the children in this kind of devastating circumstances are actually very positive, in the sense that they're saying that, you know what, I have to be in school, I must be educated, and I know that education is the only means to get me out of this bad situation. Mm-hmm. So we also get in that side of the story as well.
Yes.
And that is why I think it's important that what happens in schools is going to be pivotal in terms of interventions.
Yes. So that desire to survive and to overcome all of these obstacles is part of it. That's what you're seeing.
Absolutely.
Hmm. So there are long-term gains that can be made if we have the right interventions. And I want to speak to you about that as well. But we'll get to that a little bit later, because we are taking calls. It's on 011-883-0702. My guest is Professor Jace Pillay. He's been doing research into the psychological impacts and the psychological damage that happens to orphans, vulnerable children, and child-headed households, and has been looking quite closely as to how they cope, how they survive in the midst of all of these adversities. So give us a call on 011-883-0702 to be a part of the conversation. But I see as well that Social Development Minister Bathabile Dlamini, she called on South Africans to help identify and locate child and youth-headed households in the country to ensure that they receive the necessary support from government. And the department had said that they're compiling a registry of sorts so that they know what sort of services to provide, the necessary therapeutic interventions and resources that can be used to intervene in these homes. Have you looked at this registry, the efforts of social development?
I haven't looked at the actual registry itself, mm-hmm. but I have been quite involved and engaged with the department with regard to matters concerning orphans and vulnerable children in South Africa itself. So I have met with them on several occasions. Mm-hmm. And also at the strategic planning meeting, I also presented my findings to them. So I think to say that they know what is happening is definitely a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And for the minister to even be proactive in trying to collect this data is also a proactive stance.
But also, this idea of this community identifying child-headed households, does that speak to how the inability to access the support that government provides?
Most certainly. And you see, the thing also that we're picking up in our research is that there's mixed feelings about wanting to be identified.
Oh.
And if you talk to the children themselves, very few of them will say to you that, you know what, we want to be identified because we know that we will get the support that we need. In fact, we find the converse is true. What we're finding is that these children feel so threatened in their local communities. They feel so exploited. They're even afraid to let other people know that there is no adult figure in their homes. Some of them even go to the extent of asking friends or people that they know to come and stand outside their homes, just to pretend that someone is there as an adult, so that they don't become victimized. So the children don't want to say those things. And the other thing that we're also finding out is that They want to keep it very secretive because the social stigma of parents dying as a result of HIV and AIDS is something also that these children don't want to deal with. I mean, communities and society has made them believe that this is a terrible social stigma, and dying of such illnesses is totally unacceptable. So these kids want to keep it as strong as possible, or secretive as possible, because they don't want this, anyone to know that this is what the reasons were for the parents or the caregivers' death. So we're getting very mixed reactions in terms of being able to identify the children. Mm-hmm. Even in the research that we did, we had to go through various means of trying to be able to identify the children. But I think the idea in terms of being able to identify the children, I think it's a noble idea. Mm-hmm. And the reason being because if you know where the children are, who these children are, mm-hmm. where they are, and what support they need, then of course they can be built into the process of rendering that support from all government levels and even from the community levels. And I think also government has the responsibility to take the lead in this matter, but I think they cannot do it on their own. Mm-hmm. And the communities also need to be mobilized mm-hmm. to be able to support such children.
I'm actually trying to hold back tears just after what you've said about the vulnerability.
I know, it's going to be demoralizing.
Yes. And it actually, it's quite painful. It's quite hurtful and heartbreaking to hear of that reality, that, you know, it's something that they feel ashamed, that there's a stigma, and that stigma is brought upon by the rest of society. So it's just really heartbreaking. So anyway...
You see, the other thing also, I think also, you see, the whole concept and the kind of definition of childhood households in South Africa, mm-hmm. about in the other parts of the region also, is also problematic. You see, because there are people and structures and even government that would say that, you know what, there is no such a thing as childhood households in an African context, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. we believe that it takes a village to raise a child. So. There are no families or households where you can actually see that there are no parents or adults there that can take on those responsibilities.
Where are the extended family members?
Sometimes we also find a denial in terms of that.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Sorry about that. The extended family members.
Yes.
Do they play a part? Were you able to look into how they relate, how the kids relate to the rest of the broader family?
You know what? That was also another. Sad part of what we found, mm. because one would assume that in an African context that the extended family system and kinship ties will play a very prominent role, and of course we all believe that it does, but we actually found that to be an understatement in a sense. The reason being, we found that these children are actually being exploited, because the uncles and aunts registered them for grants. And they are collecting the grants, and these children never ever see those grants. Mm. They never even see the money that's supposed to be coming to them for them to live better lives. So we actually see a situation where children are being exploited because of the grants. And also we're finding that the situation is kind of bleak, because families no longer can afford keeping children, or keeping their own family members for that matter. Mm-hmm. And the economic circumstances are so bad that they cannot take care of their own, and as a result, even if they have the intentions of wanting to take care of the children mm. and the love for those kids, they just don't have the practical means and the economic means to do so.
Yes.
So the sad part of it is that we're not seeing that extended family system, those kinship ties that we normally boast about within an African context. Mm. We're finding more and more that is not happening right now.
Well, we are taking your calls this afternoon in conversation with Professor Jace Pillay. He's been doing research into the conditions, the psychological conditions that orphans, vulnerable children and child-headed households live with, how they cope and how they survive. And we're taking your comments, and perhaps you've had dealings with a child-headed household in your neighborhood, considering the call that was made by Social Development asking South Africans, different communities to help them identify and locate child and youth-headed households. So it's 011-883-0702. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Yes.
Welcome. Your views?
Yes. Professor, how are you?
I'm Barbara.
Professor, how are you?
Yes, he's well. Go ahead,
thanks.
Barbara.
Yes, Professor. I also want to find out from you as well that during your research process, did you encounter the same problems for the disabilities, the same problems they're encountering? Mm-hmm. Because I'm on a process to also to help them.
Okay,
it was brought to my attention mm-hmm. that those people, they are struggling to get the wheelchair, artificial legs, so forth. So
okay.
I felt this is my responsibility to try to help them. I've approached my church. I've spoken to my church. My priest said, okay, it's fine with me. She'll take it up with the church executive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting for the response from the priest. If he allows me this year or
okay.
in June, I'm going to open it. So my question here is, are you also encountering the same problem? Are those kids, the disabled kids, are they encountering the same problem?
Okay. All right, Barbara. Professor Pillay, I'm not sure if you can answer that. Did they form part
yes,
of
yes, I can
study?
Answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Part of, because I focus quite a bit in terms of vulnerable children, so children with disabilities will obviously fall part of that process.
Yeah.
But I must be honest to say that when I started this research, I focused mainly with children from childhood households.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 2 to 3 years, it also became quite clear to us that the issue around children with disabilities also needs to be dealt with.
I see.
Now, we saw a major study that came out with regard to adults with disabilities, but we haven't seen a major national study in terms of children with disabilities.
Mm.
But last year also there was a launch of the findings of some commissions around disabilities, and those findings were really also very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of our research, we've now done studies with regard to children who are blind, children who are deaf, children who are physically disabled. And those studies are virtually on the verge of completion right now. And in fact, this year we will be getting the reports based on those findings.
Yes.
But I must also point out that I think the issue with children with disabilities is even more problematic than even working with child-headed families, especially if you look at in the deep rural areas. Those children are just lying in places and not getting any support that they need.
Mm.
So that's very, very crucial that we begin to also cater for dealing with children with disabilities.
Yes.
So I understand the caller's anxieties about the issue.
Yes.
But definitely there are studies being done at the moment. But I'm hoping that the studies will also create an impact in terms of policy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then our studies are directed in terms of advising government, advising community-based organizations and NGOs in terms of directives that are needed with regard to the support interventions that we could implement.
Yes, and speaking of which, are we only treating the symptom? And what does the intervention, what should it look like in your view if we are to succeed with having meaningful intervention that delivers well-rounded individuals, young people, who've had the sort of support that they need despite the hardships?
Yes, I think if we only focus particularly on the children themselves right now, that is very symptomatic.
Yes.
And the whole mentality around the issue should be more in terms of systemic interventions. And it needs to be looking at a broad sector of stakeholders. And we need to be looking at across education, across government departments.
Mm-hmm.
And the sadness is that we have many situations where one department doesn't speak to the other in terms of what needs to be done.
Yes.
And you can find out things are happening in terms of education, things are happening in terms of the social development department, things are happening in terms of safety and security, but they don't talk to each other in terms of the strategies that could be employed.
Mm.
So in terms of addressing the problem, we need an holistic approach.
Yes, because I imagine even in the classroom, an awareness about the background and the home that the child is coming from will equip teachers to be able to deal with them in a different way, that there will be support and provisions made within the learning process.
And that's part of what we would like to address, because
yes.
you find that our studies right now gives us a whole lot of recommendations
mm-hmm.
and even suggestions in terms of what needs to be in a support program for teachers, for the learners, for parents, caregivers, and the school management team, school governing bodies, and even broader community organizations. So the approach that we're saying obviously needs to be a community-based approach that involves all sectors.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
That was Professor Jace Pillay, South African Research Chair, Education and Care in Childhood Faculty of Education at UJ, just looking at the coping mechanisms of orphans, vulnerable children, and of course, children growing up in youth and child-headed households. Because you can imagine teaching a child in a classroom who hasn't eaten, there would be incomplete schoolwork, they wouldn't participate, there's school absenteeism, there's hunger, concentration difficulties. There are all sorts of things that would hamper the ability to learn. You know, teachers also have to be equipped with that ability to look if there is sexual abuse, if there's accelerated entry into adulthood. And how do we pinpoint these things? How do we ensure that we intervene and somehow bring about a normality to their everyday lives through various interventions? So an interesting, very fascinating conversation. Heartbreaking at the same time. We have headlines with Tara at 2:30.
Thanks, Azania. Good afternoon. Heated debate has begun once again in Parliament as parties debate the President's State of the Nation address. Deputy Defence Minister Thabang Makwetla wasted no time and attacked the EFF for their actions during last week's address.
Now, I want to ask the question, Madam Speaker. The laissez-faire attitude of the presiding officers not to protect us, what does it expect us to do?
The EFF's Floyd Chivambu fired back.
It is not tradition of this house that when a point of order or a violation happened 2 weeks ago, you come here and try to be relevant like Thabang Makwetla is trying to be relevant.
But Speaker Baleka Mbete then cited the rules.
Spurious points of order are an abuse of the rules and privileges of freedom of speech.
Gauteng police are investigating a case of murder after two men were killed in what's believed to be a mob justice attack in Krugersdorp on the West Rand. A group of residents from an informal settlement in Mogale City allegedly chased six men out of the community last night toward the main road where they were killed. And the World Health Organization says countries fighting the Zika virus should consider new ways to fight disease-carrying mosquitoes, including testing the release of genetically modified insects and bacteria that stop their eggs hatching. The WHO has also highlighted the potential of releasing sterile irradiated male mosquitoes, a technique that's been developed at the United Nations International Atomic Energy Agency. Those are the headlines. This Eyewitness News, and we're at 3 o'clock or as it happens.
EWN Traffic.
At this hour in Woodmead, traffic remains very slow on the R55 from Maxwell Drive to the M1, while on the M1 South, traffic is very slow from Smith Street to the Crown Interchange. In Mill Park, we have slow-moving traffic on Empire Road between Barry Hertzog and Jan Smuts. In Parktown, faulty traffic lights at Loch and Jan Smuts are causing heavy delays. Traffic lights are also out of order in four ways at William Nicol and Uranium, as well as in Magaliesig at Witkoppen and Main Road. And roadworks are slowing down traffic on the N14 westbound between Diepsloot and Malibongo Drive. Karabo Jali, EWN Traffic.
The Money Show, weekday evenings at 6.
We're talking about the science of public speaking. We've seen the State of the Nation address. A lot of people liked what the President had to say. Did they like how he said it? One of the masters, of course, is Pravin Gordhan. He'll be delivering the budget next week, and he will have a slightly different style. We're going to get public speaker par excellence, Busi Tembakwayo.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702. Your number one news and talk station. The Money Show is brought to you by Old Mutual. Do great things.
The Johannesburg Roads Agency is in the spotlight this week on 702.